No one plans for hair loss, but through Hims, you can take the next step with confidence. Access treatments made with clinically proven ingredients like finasteride and minoxidil to stop hair loss and regrow hair in 3 to 6 months. No waiting rooms, no hoops, just ingredients with a track record of results. You shouldn't have to go out of your way to feel like yourself. Hims brings expert care straight to you, with 100% online access to personalized treatments that put your goals first. For simple online access to personalized and affordable care for hair loss, ED, weight loss, and more, visit hims.com/Hail Mary. That's hims.com/Hail Mary for your free online visit. hims.com/Hail Mary. Individual results may vary, based on studies of topical and oral minoxidil and finasteride. Prescription required. See website for full details, restrictions, and important safety information.
Listen up, football fans. You won't want to miss this.
Right now, new Bet365 customers bet $5 and get $300 in bonus bets, win or lose. So you could turn that $300 into something bigger when you bet on money lines, spread, totals, player props.
$300 in bonus bets when new customers bet $5. I know where I'm going to bet from now on. Download the app today and see why it's never ordinary at Bet365.
Gambling problem? Call 1-800-GAMBLER. 21 plus only. Must be physically located in Ohio. T&Cs apply. In-app only.
This is Power Athlete Radio. With your hosts, Denny K, Professor Booty, and the Luke Summers. And now, toes forward, hips locked, shoulders set, and retract those scapulas. It's time for some knowledge bombs.
Thanks for tuning in to Power Athlete Radio. This week, we are joined by New Orleans Saints fullback Austin Johnson. Get to know this football pro and what he had to do to make it to that level. Between training, traveling, and trying to stay healthy, Austin is motivated every day simply by wanting it more than his competition. John and Austin rap about life as an NFL player. Though the perks are plenty, Austin stays true to his somewhat humble beginnings. He feels he has an edge over other players because initially scouts didn't think he had what it took to play professional football. Well, jokes on them, obviously. Now he says that chip on his shoulder has done nothing but fuel the fire and determination to stick around for as long as possible. What role did CrossFit play in prepping him for the NFL? And how did he evolve into the self-proclaimed power athlete you see today? To find out, listen now. This is episode 150.
Five, four, three. Power Athlete Nation, what is up? You got Luke here with John in SoCal at Power Athlete HQ. Texas dialed in from Washington, D.C. And we have the amazing Austin Johnson on, 6'2", 240-pound giant who can palm a medicine ball, chews on glass, spits bullets.
I grew that beard in one
You're day. Damn right.
Shaves his beard every day and it grows out to a foot long.
I shaved this morning.
It's feared the beard. So Batman vs Superman.
Oh yeah, I haven't seen it yet. Is it good?
I don't know. Tech saw it. I haven't seen it yet, but yeah, I've heard a lot of. I've been reading the fucking internet, which is the worst thing to do. Yeah, which all the butthurt people are just like,
ah. You gotta stay off the internet. It's fucking stuff.
There's some twists and turns, Luke. So you be careful what you read.
Well, but every preview that I saw is Superman landing.
Superhero landing.
Like, on his knee with, like, a fist in the ground. Like, there was, like, 7 scenes like that. And I was like,
some Thor.
Was it just them showing the same scene over or, like, different vantage points? But I'm like, is that how he lands all the time? You would think that Superman would actually have better proprioceptive ability than have to land in a three-point or in some tripod opposed from, like, a universal athletic position.
Are you looking for a universal athletic position landing, John?
Yeah.
Yeah, hips back. We need to, text, you know, force reduction, posterior chain.
Yeah, I mean, you know, if he's looking to absorb eccentric load through his body and translate that into ground force, he's got to do it the most efficient way possible. And you know what? Landing on your knee with your fist is probably not the most efficient way. What do you think about that?
Luke, I think this is your next article.
I think it is. I'm already – the wheels are turning, Tex. The inefficiencies of the superhero landing. not meant for real humans. I mean, you fucking blow up your knee.
Oh, yeah. Oh, yeah. Dude.
Dislocate your shoulder or elbow.
Dude, I remember I was trying to fucking cut a guy, and I tripped. And when I tripped, I did this like kind of like awkward thing where I tried to like fling my body at him. Uh-huh. And I ended up landing with my knee square on the turf. Ugh. Like literally my knee just drove right in the turf. It was in Buffalo. And I remember fucking, I didn't know if I broke my kneecap in half for probably an hour. And I just thinking, I'm like, I cracked my fucking kneecap. And like, it was, I swear to God, I thought I was bleeding. And I was like, I fucking broke my kneecap. And I just kind of went out there. And then like about an hour later, it just kind of went away. And I just never said anything. So I was like, well, shit, you know. As you know, the last thing you want to do is tell anybody about an injury. Then you got to come in the next day to fucking treat it early. They get Tuesday, and then you get your whole fucking day messed up.
And the mornings.
And then you got to go in there and have a bunch of useless bullshit that doesn't fucking work.
But that's like exactly how I tore my, I tore like a bunch of cartilage in there. And I just like landed straight on it, like you were saying, on the turf. And just like tore up all this cartilage in there. And I tried to like jump off the field like I was all good.
It wasn't happening.
Dude, I'm good, and I'm like limping around. They're telling me to go back in. I can't even like, my knee keeps clicking. It's not good shit.
Dude, I was we were running a little like a little 94, a little I was playing right guard, and we ran a little inside zone to the right, and I had a big fucking three technique on me, and I remember I got underneath them. I was fucking driving them up, and got about three steps of movement, and our fucking center loafed, and the other D tackle hit that guy. And they fucking both landed right on the back of my heel while my toe was up. And I was in the field and they landed. And I fucking got the worst turf toe. Like, that thing was like, it looked like hamburger meat. And then they were injecting it. And then, like, 2 years later, when I'm on, like, a physical, they just x-rayed my foot. They're like, oh, you had this injury. Come to find out, I had a mild Lisfranc, which is where, you know, there's, like, a ligament that runs through the middle of the foot. And if it fucking tears, then they have to pin your foot, and it's pretty much like where it comes from was Lisfranc was Napoleon's doctor. And before that, when this would happen on like, because it would actually happen in the stirrups, the soldiers, they just cut their fucking foot off.
Oh,
so Lisfranc was this doctor that was like, no, we don't have to do it, and showed how to fix it. So I go through, and they're like, you had a mild Lisfranc. Did your foot hurt? I'm like, yeah, every fucking day. And they were like, what they do? They were like, I was like, I don't know. They told me to just fucking go out there.
Yeah.
And they were like, it healed itself in kind of a weird way, and I'm like, oh, fuck it, doesn't hurt me that bad.
Well, it's a compensation, right? You learn just different ways to work around the limitation.
Yeah, I mean, that goes back to, you know, and you'll appreciate this, is the best athletes in the world aren't necessarily the best athletes. They're just the ones that can recruit around the injuries the best. You know, and I'm sure you add that, like, you know, some guy gets injured, and all of a sudden he can't fucking play a snap, and then other dudes get injured, and they're like, I'm fine. You know, and that was always my deal, was like, I always knew it was time to get out of the game when all of a sudden, like, the wheels just fell off. And, like, I always knew it would be, like, the straw that broke the camel's back. I'd have all these injuries, and then they would be, like, the final injury where I was like, I can't do it anymore. Time to go home. And that's just what happened to me.
Yeah, it's just about which injuries you can manage and handle. It's always something, though. I mean, it'll be, like, Achilles tendonitis to patella tendonitis to doing some power cleans, just, like, a soft workout day, and you fuck up your wrist somehow, and it's always something.
It's or even I remember we used to, like, I always hated half speed shit. Like, we'd be out there in pads, and, like, you know, I always like joke, like, with the Braveheart, where I'd be like, well, we didn't get dressed up for nothing, you know?
Yeah.
And then they'd be like, oh, we're just gonna take one step and fit, you know, this, and that shit never works, dude. You're like, if you're in the fucking, I'm like, then just take it all off, no knee pads. I remember 1 year in training camp, they were like, you know what, we're gonna take away your knee pads so that people aren't on the ground, and that's going to prevent it. Wow. I'm telling you, dude, this is the retardedness of fucking NFL football.
Like, yeah, well,
you know what? We're just not going to give you full pads. So what we're going to do is we're just going to give you shorts with thigh pads in them.
Yeah, so that way you don't go as hard.
Yeah, you don't go as hard. But the best part is nobody wears fucking knee pads in the NFL.
Yeah.
Back when you were playing, y'all were doing two-a-days. So y'all are full pads twice a day for 3 hours each session. Okay.
My rookie, I get drafted in 99. My rookie year, I come in. We had 42 days of training camp. We had a bye in preseason, right? 42 days of fucking training camp. We were in double days for fucking 42 days. Andy Reid's first year at the Eagles, we were in double days. Fucking, it was a baton death march of death marches. And then I went
I've heard he's not as bad anymore about that stuff either.
No, he's chilled the fuck out. But and then I left there and went to play for Dick Vermeil, which was, you know, I don't know if you've ever heard the stories, but when Dickie B was at the Rams, they had a fucking mutiny.
Oh, yeah?
Dudes were literally like, fucking cut me, I'm out of here, and the whole team went to quit. And the idea is they can't fire us all. And that was how they finally got a fucking day off.
Yeah.
So we went in, and we were in like 2-3 hour padded practices every fucking day.
Mutiny, huh?
And it was crazy. And then I remember the year I left. So my last year was 08, and then I retired in 09. And I remember they went in, they redid the CBA. And now what is it, like 3 padded practices in training camp?
You can't have like – you can practice like 3 days in a row with pads, and you have the fourth day has to be like off.
So they changed all these rules, and I remember Tony Gonzalez called me up, and Tony's like, dude, he's like, fuck, man. He goes, if only – he goes, we could have played 20 years like this, and he got to play 17. He's like, dude, if only you had fucking lasted a little bit longer. I'm like, dude, I got fucking road gradered. I mean, it was just – yeah. But, I mean, the thing which was interesting is the only way you learn to play offensive line is fucking with reps. And, like, actually, like, hitting and, like, you know, that's how you hone your craft. So what's kind of blows me away is when I watch it now, you can see, like, even in, like, the first or second game of the year, you can see how fucking high dudes are playing. They don't learn to bend their knees. And it just comes from the lack of reps. So all of a sudden, these offensive linemen just getting their fucking ass beat. And it's not for anything other than the fact that they just haven't had as many reps. I mean, they're out there making J.J. Watt look like a fucking, you know, Bruce Smith on every play. And I'm like, they're like, it's amazing. I'm like, no, the offensive linemen just aren't as fucking good as they used to be.
Yeah.
That's an official call out to J.J. Watt.
Fuck him. You know what? If I had one regret, was that I didn't get to play against that dude. I would have loved to have played against that guy.
There you go.
Yeah, I mean, big, tall guy, stand-ups. I mean, he plays so fucking high. Always, you know, big, open moves, dude. We would have busted that dude's ribs up. I would have tried to hurt him on every play. I mean, we went down to play against Miami, and I was playing left guard. And, dude, like, our left tackle decided he had a phantom back injury, like, 10 minutes before the game because he was all nervous about Jason Taylor coming down there. Was having a hell of a year. And all of a sudden, dude, we're literally – getting ready to go out, and he all of a sudden lays down on the ground. I was like, I can't go on my back locked up. It's like 10 minutes before the game. So we're looking around, and we only dressed 7 dudes. We had a backup center, and we had a swing guy. And I remember the young dude, the coach looks at him, he's like, you're going to have to start against at left tackle in Miami against Jason Taylor. And, like, the kid's fucking shitting himself. And, like, I remember offensive line coach was like, well, what do you think, John? I'm like, let's just fucking go two-jet. We'll just fucking slide left every time. And he's like, why? And like, because all we got to do is hopefully we get that guy in like a 1 and put Jason wide. I'm going to bust his fucking rib. And that's what I did. I went and busted his rib and took him out of the game.
That's awesome.
He tried this big, like overarching, like big swim move like this. And I hit him right here. And he was like, whoo! Left the game. And I remember I saw him after. He's like, you motherfucker, I was having a fucking Pro Bowl here. And you got to come break my rib. I'm like, dude, we got to fucking, you're about to kill this fucking young kid. But
that's right.
It was a plan in the NFL. Now they probably fucking suspend me for something like that.
Probably.
So Austin played at University of Tennessee, currently a fullback on the Saints, man. So what's going on? What's up? Thanks for joining Power Athlete Radio.
Hey, thanks for having me. I'm just hanging out in North Carolina. Just kind of chilling with my family is where they're from, and just waiting to go back to New Orleans for OTAs. And just been training here, so it's been going well.
So when does OTA start? I guess right after the draft, right?
April 18th is like when all like the veterans and stuff come. So then I think like the rookies get there a couple weeks after that.
Nice. Well, don't they bring the rookies in for that little like rookie deal? They still have that?
They'll have like a rookie mini camp or whatever, and that's like so like the draft rookies, and then they'll bring in a bunch of guys. We'll all go to that camp like right before we start practicing for OTAs.
Nice.
So that sucks. The rookie minicamp sucks. So my first year I was on the practice squad. So the following year I had to do rookie minicamp again. And it's so bad because like you have all these rookies there that are like trying to prove themselves.
Sure.
And it's like, all right, we're in walkthrough and these kids, all we have is a helmet on. And these like young dudes are like coming full speed, like bull rushing and pass pro. Like I feel so bad for our tackles because like, I don't even know what to tell them because they're getting either bull rushed or swimmed or spinned, and they got no pads on. It's like impossible to play. And I remember whenever I finally got my
cutting people.
Really. there's so many more fights.
Story about that shit. Like literally, like we were in a fucking one-on-one, like just like walkthrough shit, and we had a dude who was a practice squad guy that they signed off or that got cut by the Giants. And literally, the dude fucking clubbed me in the head on a walkthrough. And like, I'm like, you know, we're wearing fucking helmets, and I'm like, this motherfucker. So the next play, you know, we like set up real fast, and I flashed him and fucking speared him right in the knees and fucking cut him in a drill. And the dude took a shot of me, and we ended up getting a big fight.
And I'm sure he didn't do that again, though.
There's a portion where Tex and I, as you know, high school washouts of high school football, have no fucking clue. The level of intensity that, like, people want to survive and get their moment in that.
Well, it's really interesting because you bring in, like, when I came in the NFL, the comment was made, you have really violent people getting paid a lot of money to do really violent things to other violent people. And upon that, just violence is going to fucking happen. And, like, and then it was weird. Then there was, like, this whole shift into, like, you know, we need to have a better image. We don't need you guys to be as violent. And I remember that shift happened in like 2003. All of a sudden, I got fined like 5 games in a row. I basically got fined $50,000 in like 2 or 3 games for taking late shots down around the pile. I kicked the dude in the balls. I mean, there was just a bunch of weird shit. And all of a sudden, they were just doling out these fines. Before, it was like $1,500. You know, you're like, all right, it's all right. But all of a sudden, you get like a $5,000 or $10,000 fine, and you're like, holy fuck, I'm gonna get, like, that's a lot of money. And so then, like, there was like this whole weird thing that they sent us. Like, I remember Runyon and I got it, where it was like, you know, based on your history of violence, we are gonna take a like very aggressive approach in terms of finding you, try to, you know, change the image. And pretty funny, dude. So,
isn't History of Violence a movie?
Yeah, it's a great one.
Yeah, it is. Yeah. This is a good one.
Yeah, that actually was in Philly. That was a Philly deal. But you know, so it's you know, the NFL, and you know this, dude. It's like their biggest fear is that people are going to realize that it's just entertainment. Like they've somehow like weaved this thing in that like a football is in America's, you know,
it's like a religion. Yeah.
Yeah, it's like a religion. And the last thing they want to do is have fucking players. I mean, dude, like they'll be pissed at you, but when things get on SportsCenter and all of a sudden there's like Ray Rice punching his old lady, oh my God. It wasn't a big deal until the video surfaced and then they had a PR problem. So
Well, awesome. Give us a little background, man. I mean, growing up, what sports did you play? When did you start training? I know you're following Field Strong. You've been involved with Wade's Army and everything. So I guess
– Yes, thank you.
Yeah, and we appreciate that. But give us – I mean, where'd you come from? How'd you get to where you're at? You know, what was what were some defining moments in your development?
Well, I came from North Carolina, Hickory, North Carolina. Obviously went to Tennessee, and I played linebacker. And I went through a lot of stuff there. I went through 3 head coaches. So my first year I had Fulmer, and then I had Lane Kiffin, and then I had Derek Dooley, and I kind of bounced around there. And I graduated from there as a linebacker, and that's when I went to – and, like, throughout college I was always, you know, just your typical bodybuilding kind of meathead in the weight room, I would say. I didn't really follow any kind of CrossFit stuff. I know it wasn't huge then, but – I was all about just getting bigger and stronger. And then I left there and I went to the Baltimore Ravens as a free agent. They signed me after the draft, or like we agreed to terms. And when I got there,
What year?
This was in 2011. So I failed my physical with a torn labrum. So I had left there and I went and worked out for a couple teams. And nobody wanted to sign me because of my shoulder. And I was supposed to be playing linebacker at the time. So I sat out like a whole year. I went and got my shoulder fixed. I came back home. I was rehabbing it. And my buddy, Kent Stamey, he owned CrossFit Hickory at the time. So I kind of went to him and because I knew he knew a lot about, you know, just rehabilitation stuff. And he kind of strengthened my shoulder through like some CrossFit type stuff. And that's kind of when, like, I really got into CrossFit, I would say. I wouldn't say I was really into, like, the power athlete. I really wasn't. I was more of, like, I was doing these, like, long Metcons, like, just getting in shape, starting to get, like, ripped up, like, all this stuff. Like, I was thinking I was looking good. I was competing in the Open. I finished, like, 70th in my region. Like, I thought I was all that and all this. And then the Saints called me, and they told me to come. They wanted me to play fullback, and I'd waited, like, a year. So I was like, you know what, like, screw it. I'll go to the Saints. I'll play fullback. Like, it's a dream. I went there. I went through camp. And, I got cut and went to the practice squad. And I was weighing probably, like, 235, at the most. Once that season got over with, I was like, you know what, I got to get serious about my training. So I gained, like, 20 pounds, and then I started doing more of the – field strong stuff. I looked at, like, the CrossFit football websites, the strongman wads, and I started just kind of adjusting my training for the past 3 years, just basically, like, lifting heavy, moving it quick, moving it, not a lot of rest, doing that kind of stuff, and that's kind of how I got into it.
Yeah, got to replicate the man to the sport.
Yeah. You know, the I kind of had a weird kind of vision, too. So I started training at a CrossFit gym in, like, 2008, and, you know, we were doing, a bunch of Metcon stuff, and then I ended up competing in the CrossFit Games, and then, like, a week later, I went to go training camp with the Patriots, and all of a sudden, like, I went out, I smoked my conditioning test, and all of a sudden, we get down to pads for that day one, all of a sudden, the ball snaps, and I remember, like, my mind was saying move, and I couldn't get my body to move as fast as I needed it to, and I remember I got beat around the corner at tackle, and I remember I had this, like, almost, like, mild panic attack where I realized, I was like, oh, fuck. Submaximal efforts produce submaximal results.
All right.
I remember, like, having to, like, all of a sudden be like, all right, well, fuck, if this is on one, I'm going to have to jump this count every time, you know, just to try to fucking beat these guys, because I just didn't feel like I had the same pop in my legs. I ended up getting hurt. When I came home, I had knee surgery and was, like, you know, coming back to rehab, and that's when CrossFit hit me up about doing CrossFit football, and I pretty much had all of this time to think about everything that I did fucking wrong in my training. I was like, you know what? I'm never going to allow anybody to go down the road that I went down. And so that's where CrossFit football came out, and power athlete and all these things was about. One day some football player will stumble upon this, and he does not need to know the fucking mistakes that I made. Mm-hmm. And that's really where the stuff came about, you know, hey, if you're going to do something, let's do, you know, short, heavy, hard, fast. Let's bang some heavy weights. You know, the idea that to be able to survive a longer Metcon, you have to have a conversion of fast twitch and slow twitch muscle fibers just to be able to survive that type of stuff. And on the football field, where 5 to 7 seconds as hard as you can at max intensity, those two are not mutually exclusive, you know, and the idea that, you know, I got to train one, and that's really where the whole training kind of took this approach. So I'm stoked that, you kind of saw that transition. We're like, yo, man, I got to go this direction. So,
yeah, like, one of the biggest things I saw was, like, not just, like, the CrossFit mentality. I guess if you want to use the word CrossFit, but, like, these workouts, like, took me to, like, a certain point where, you know, you always hit, like, I love, like, hitting that wall and being able to, like, push past it. And, like, I'll never forget my rookie year. We're playing the Dolphins in the fourth preseason game. And I'm sitting there on special teams, and I'm smoked, like, because I'm number two on the depth chart. So, you know, the fourth preseason game, the starters don't play. Sure. So I've been playing the whole game, all special teams, and I'm just dying. Like, I'm tired. I'm over it. And I'll never forget, I'm sitting on punt team. And, like, I'm sitting there winded, like, about to puke. And I remember thinking, like, dude, I've had this feeling, like, so many times in a lot of my workouts. And I can either, you know, hit this wall right now and jog down the field, you know, it's another play. Or I can go and make the most out of it. This could be my last NFL play ever and make a tackle. And I went down there and I made the tackle. I'm not saying that credit to myself, like, oh, I made a tackle. But just about, like, how, like, that kind of – that workout, no matter what workout it was – could have possibly helped me, you know, further my playing career now. So
did in college, what did your strength conditioning look like in college? I mean, I know you mentioned Lane Kiffin, who, you know, I don't know much about the guy other than the fact that, you know, having gone to Berkeley, I'm basically dislike everything USC. So I just kind of, you know, and living here in Orange County, which is like the fucking the hotbed for the SC douchebags. Yeah,
Trojan Cat.
Oh, it's fucking worse. I drive by and I want to throw like rocks at all my neighbors that have the SC flags up. So I just always kind of paid attention to that, and I was surprised when he went out there. But what did the strength conditioning look like out there? I mean, was it more like kind of NFL based? Was it kind of more mat drills? Like, what did it look like?
Well, I went, since we had so many head coaches, I went through like four or five strength and conditioning coaches. Oh, so true. I saw so many different types of like programming. One of our coaches, he'd have us come in at 5 a.m. every morning, and we'd run a half gassers. So we'd run like 10 half gassers, and then we'd up down for our rest, and then do it again. And then then we'd go to class, then we'd have to come back late in the afternoon and do our strength portion.
So you had a little dawn patrol every morning.
Yeah. It actually kind of sucked, cause like a bunch of guys lost like a ton of weight.
Sure.
Cause back in college, like you're not eating, you're not thinking about your food as kind of like your job at that age, I would say. Like now it's like, I'm constantly thinking about when's my next meal. But back in college, it was kind of like, all right, well, I'm bored right now. I'll go eat or whatever it was.
Well, but, shit, we were in college, shit. We had like, $740 bucks a month was our scholarship check. My rent was like $75, and we only had a training table for one meal during the season. So
yeah.
We were so far below the poverty line that I remember one of the guys I played with was like, you know, we can probably go get some food stamps. And I mean, like, we were so far, you know, so like I remember one of my NFL moments was like when I first got paid. I remember I went to the grocery store and I was like, I could fucking buy all of this cheese. it was the weirdest thing. Like, there's cheese. And I was like, I can afford all of this.
Yeah.
And I went over and like, normally you're like over there, like doing this deal. You're like, ah, shit, man. Okay. If I get some
cheese only on Saturdays,
I could probably get like a pound of this. And I remember being like, fuck, I could get like 10 pounds of this fucking like $300 or like the $30 fillets. And I like that. That was like the best thing when like I finally realized I could afford all of the food I wanted to eat, and I didn't fucking buy everything. Yeah,
exactly.
Austin, did you have Benny Wiley 1 year at Tennessee?
Yeah, I did. He was awesome. I mean, I got to like be close with him, like in a relationship wise. He was always kind of a good like mentor to me. But he was. Do you know him?
Yeah, I worked under him at UT. In Texas.
Oh, yeah. He's yoked up, isn't he? He's huge.
Yeah, it was hilarious. Whenever we had a recruit walk in, Benny would get a call in 30 minutes before the walk down, and he'd just put on tight spandex, get a pump, and then walk the kid around.
Yeah. He loves doing forearms. He always wanted to do, like, forearms and biceps. That's all he wanted to do.
He's like the most jacked get-back coach in the world, huh?
Yeah. I saw he's about to be on some like show. They have like some show coming out soon, like where their team, like these personal trainers are like teamed up with these like average like house moms and stuff, and like they have to like go through obstacle courses and stuff. And I saw Benny Wiley as one of the contestants.
Dude, if you guys don't know, there's strength coaches have a dual purpose in college and the NFL. They're known as what's called get back coaches. So in the end, so like if you watch like during the game, there's like coaches, you know, obviously headsets.
Get back, coach.
Right. So all like the coaches and everybody are there and the players. And if there's usually like different sections, you'll see them painted. If the players or the coaches get too far on the field, they'll get a penalty. So they put the strength coach in charge of making sure that people don't like get too far out of their space. So we used to call them the fucking get back coaches. Get back. And so all the strength coaches are basically professional get back coaches. And I'd be like, it'd be fucking game day. And I'd be like, hey, you need to fucking lock in and make sure that nobody gets on the field. Well, you know what? We're going to fucking win and lose based on your – I used to fuck with the strength coaches so bad. And I'd fucking – all of a sudden they'd be standing there like, get back. And I'd fucking push them on the field. They'd be like, well, or some fucking thing. I'm like, get back. And we used to fuck with those dudes nonstop. So my favorite is, it's always a strength coach. The one dude I forgot at USC that like tripped the kid, I think. Was it SC or what was that?
Where he actually, that was for like New England, wasn't it?
Oh, yeah. Yeah. So, that's basically get back coach got too far on the field and tripped somebody. So I thought that was in college that, but that was at New England, huh? I think it was a college. There was a college that did it too.
It happens more than we hear about, but yeah.
So
I know it was the Eagles. There was an Eagles.
Oh, Eagles. It was the Eagles. That's who it was.
But you don't call those strength coaches the get back coaches? You never heard that?
Oh, I've heard that, and it's hilarious that you say that because it's so true, and they're so annoying.
Yeah,
it's they piss me off.
This is their game day.
I get it.
Fucking get back, get back, and we just.
Dude, I would crush that.
Oh yeah.
Well, like I'm not in on every play, so like I have to listen to the personnel. So like I'm like up by the coaches giving the personnel grouping, and our strength coach come up like, Austin, get back. And I was like, I hear you. Like, shut up.
Oh, dude. Yeah, we used to fuck with those dudes nonstop. That's why I would always go, like, sit on the bench. Like, I never get over there. I either was on the field or, like, sitting, like, I'd just hang out by the bench in the back and just be like, I can't get near these fucking guys. But then the other problem, too, is if you sit on the bench or anywhere near the bench, your position coach will see you and come over and talk to you about random shit that, like,
you don't need that shit.
Well, yeah. You know what? Like, if you're trying to coach me on game day, either I suck or you failed. Like, at that point, like, the hay's in the barn, go out there and fucking do your job. Like the worst is we come over and they want to go over all the cut-ups, like the fucking printouts. So what they do is they get all this video and they, like, want to show you all this shit. And you're like, dude, we fucking saw this all week, dude. You're not going to teach me something on you know, the 3 minutes we're on the sideline, there's going to be this revolutionary shit. And then the coaches are fucking going crazy. And I'm like, dude, fuck you. Just let the fucking real.
Let the kids play. Just, you got to let those guys play.
So, like, we used to, like, kind of, like, go over and sit down for a second. And the coach come over and just fucking walk. They'd be like, where are you going? I'll be like, oh, I'll be over here hiding. Get the fuck away from me. So, the joys of NFL football. Dealing with a bunch of people I don't want to be in a foxhole with.
Yeah.
Fucking worst.
So, Austin, let's go back to Tennessee. And like, how would you compare and contrast over the three coaching staffs just that training? You know, so we got Benny's training, which is forearms and biceps. Then
and
you had
performance polos. No sleep.
Yeah, and then I had Johnny Long. So he was my freshman year. He was going to be – he was a lot more Olympic lifting type. I had him for a short period of time, but we would, like, snatch and power clean and do all that. And then and I always could tell a lot by a strength coach, like, looking back now, based off the standard of the squat. Because, like, some of my strength coaches back in the day, they would, like, you know, guys would literally go down 2 inches to, like, the little pole or the line and come back up and get good lift. Or, like, give them the spot up and then, like, you know, so that's kind of how it – and then one of my strength coaches was – he has a military background. McKeefrey was his last name.
Oh yeah, yeah, yeah. What's his name? He's buddies with Ben from Train Heroic.
Oh yeah.
Yeah, yeah. That's how we know that guy. Yeah, McKeefrey. Yeah.
Yeah, he was good too. You know, he was more. He liked doing like UFC stuff. Like we'd have like a guy come in there. We'd like do stuff with our hands and fight and stuff like that, which was pretty cool. But like everyone brought like their own little thing. But most of it all was bodybuilding in the weight room. We always did like 110s. McKeefrey liked doing like 300-yard sprints, which now I don't really see.
The 300-yard shuttles.
Yeah.
So you had to run like, was it like either 5 or 6, 50s or 60s?
Yep.
That was like the, in college, my strength coach, Todd Rice, that was like the gold standard was the fucking 300-yard shuttle. And you had the choice of either 560s or 650s. So what do you select?
Fucking the barrel. Just chew on a barrel. Fucking pull the trigger.
I'm all about less is more. So, like, to me, the 560s means less turns,
yeah,
right?
Yeah. No,
so,
for sure.
Yeah, less turns. So that was the one I remember. We did it 1 year. We did the 560s, and I did fine. And then all of a sudden we went to the 650s, and I fucking imploded. It was like a monkey jumped on my back on that last one.
The year before I got to New Orleans, their conditioning test was 300-yard shuttles. And then once the year I got there, that was Sean Payton's suspension year. And then the year I got there, Sean Payton comes back and he implements like CrossFit into our
like Fran. Workouts. He's like, hey, we're doing Fran for our conditioning. Hey, is Scotty still fucking fat ass? Still your
yeah, you know Scotty.
Oh, that fat piece of shit. He was our he was one of the assistants when I was in Philly, and
oh gosh,
such a douchebag. Yeah.
What's the conditioning test look like now, Austin?
Well, we've had three of them now, or two, yeah, three. So like the first year we did it, it was, I can tell you exactly what it was. It was 10 power cleans, 15 burpees, 20 squats on the ball, like on a med ball. And then you ran 10 back, 20 back, 30 back. That's one round. You did three rounds of that for time.
Did Coach
Payton
design that?
Coach Payton supposedly wrote that workout. And that's like
the
so
worst
many,
workout I've ever heard.
It, like, you should have seen it. It was bad. The power cleans were like, the power clean weight was like 185 or something like that. The guy's backs were shot. We had one guy go to the hospital because he was like, he couldn't breathe. And you couldn't even hear anything in the special teams meeting that night because everyone had that cough, you know?
Yeah.
We were inside. And like, you could, yeah, it was so bad. So then like the following year, they're like, all right, we got to take out like the barbell stuff and all that. So we did like, it's like 10 ball slams or 15 ball slams, 10 hand release push-ups. And then you push the sled half the field. And then you ran to the – so you're going across the field. So you push the sled half the field. You run to the other side and back. So it was like a gasser, but you would push the sled halfway. Yeah. And you did like five rounds of that or something like that, which was a little better because – but then like guys complaining that like the turf, there were certain parts on the turf that were – didn't slide as well as others. You know, everyone always has some kind of excuse.
Oh, Jesus.
Did y'all have those workout heroes, like the bubble players that are just going balls out on the workout to make the starters look?
Oh yeah, you definitely have those guys. And I'll admit my rookie year, I was that guy. I was like, oh, I do CrossFit. I'm going to definitely dominate this workout. But yeah, you got the guys, or you have like the rookies that are like go balls out in the very beginning and then they just tank. So they ultimately fail their conditioning test.
Yeah.
Because how they judge, one thing I liked was how they judge the, like if you pass fail on these type of workouts, was they took it. So when you did that 10, 10, 10, and then you push the sled, that was one round and they got your time from that round. So you wanted to keep a consistent time each round. Okay. So if your last round fell off by like 20 seconds to, you know, a minute, then you failed the conditioning test.
Would you rest between rounds or was it just running clock?
Well, no, you got to sandbag the shit out of that thing.
Yeah.
It was like, I think you had like, it was like each round you had 3 minutes. So it was 3 minutes for each round. You rested the remainder of the three minutes.
Okay.
Do you think that, adding some elements of that kind of mixed modal kind of deal help or hurt the team in terms of overall like performance?
You talking about like kind of how we do the conditioning tests and stuff?
Well, no, I just always wondered like, like whenever, you know, an NFL team has a lot of success and
yeah.
then all of a sudden they like, you know, have less success, people always kind of look at things and be like, well, what changed? You know, and I know that, you know, New Orleans had done so well for so long, and then the last couple seasons has kind of like, you know, and like, you know, what changed? You know, Sean Payton, is it players? I mean, quarterback, like what changed? And, you know, I always wonder if, you know, like maybe, you know, was it training? Was it players? Like, you know, I mean, are you guys poised for a new year? Like, you know, compared to, I mean, because, dude, there was a time where fucking New Orleans was, dude, unbelievable. I mean, you know, watching, you know, the defense was fast. I mean, special teams, I mean, just really, really played a you know, solid game. So I'm just wondering kind of, you know, was it a change in philosophies? Like, you know, how did it all kind of, you know?
Yeah, like, you know, like my first year I got there, when we like started doing like some of this, like Sean Payton brought, like we had a good year that year. We went like – I think we won the first round of the playoffs and we ended up losing the second round to Seattle, who ultimately went on to go to the Super Bowl. And I felt like that team, like when we did those workouts and stuff, it was like really competitive. And I thought it brought like a good competitive nature. And we had camp in New Orleans. We had like a lot of leaders on the team, like older guys, veteran guys that I think you ultimately need on the team, even if their production isn't where it used to be. I think their presence helped so much. And, you know, I'm not like pointing anything. I don't know what the issue was, but then my second year, we moved camp to West Virginia at the Greenbrier. So we started having camp there. which I don't know. I would wouldn't say that that's the problem because, I mean, we're just changing locations.
Sure.
But that changed. We lost, like, a lot of veteran guys that, you know, I think the they thought were replaceable, which kind of hurt us in our leadership factor.
Sure.
And, I just think it's a bunch of stuff that kind of –
Yeah, it's kind of a not just one thing. I mean, that's probably one of the most insightful and one of the most underrated things that people don't realize about an NFL team is that, you know, you have these kind of veteran leadership, and where that becomes most apparent is when all of a sudden shit starts going south. Because you have this weird, it's kind of like in the Army, you have like enlisted guys, you have officers, and then you have obviously the higher ups, but it's like, you know, all of a sudden there's this kind of weird deal where you have like your officers, but then there's like the enlisted guys that are like your chiefs that are in charge. Mm-hmm. And it's like when the young guys don't know what to do, they fucking don't go to the, like those guys aren't really leading day to day. And so I always think like if your officers are like your, you know, coaches per se, and then your enlisted guys are the players,
Yeah. You
have to have that kind of veteran leadership that sits at the top, because all of a sudden when things are going south, or you're down in a game, or, you know, things aren't going right, or there's some bullshit, like, you know, who knows, stupid stuff going on in the locker room, you always need those older dudes that can go, like, one, settle everybody down, sort some shit out, or come up with a big play when all of a sudden things look fucking dismal. And, you know, that was kind of interesting for me. I remember being a young guy, and there was old dudes, you know, when I was a young dude, like, I came in, and, like, you know, these old guys kind of took us under their wing. And then all of a sudden I show up and they cut all those old guys. And then, like, I was the starter as a rookie. And I'm like looking around and I'm like, where those old guys go that we're talking about, you know, doing stuff. And now all of a sudden they're gone. So I always think that, like, you know, that's the problem with the NFL, is always constantly looking to, like, stay younger. And, you know, we got to replace this guy and, you know, stay younger. And then they end up kind of losing those dudes. And I think that's really where you get a lot of that veteran leadership, which is just such a deal. But it's kind of a sad deal, but it's the fucking nature of the game, dude. All of a sudden, you hit like 7-8 years and 30 years old, and all of a sudden, expiration date starts popping up on you real fast.
Yeah. It's amazing how, like, experience really does, like, come into factor in the NFL and in that working world, because guys that have just been there, done that, they just get it. And, like, that's why you don't see these rookies coming in. Like, it's very seldom you see, like, a rookie come in and just dominate, because it's just – It's a different beast. I mean, you know, you could actually be an average college player and come in and actually be really successful in the NFL. And, you know, there's just something to it that, you know, some people just can't, you know, grasp.
But don't they always talk about, like, I remember every year they're like, oh, this rookie. And I'd be like, sure, see what he does. And you know what? And like, the other one, too, and what most people don't factor in is that, you know, in college, your season's 10, 11, 12 weeks. You got maybe a week or two of training camp. That's like 12, 13 weeks. In an NFL season, that's like the first quarter of the season, because you're in training camp for like, you know, 3, 4, 5 weeks, and you get to there and it's like all of a sudden, like, you know, you hit like mid, end of like November, early December, and you see these rookies coming in, like somebody shit on them, and you're like, dude, you're all right? They're like, man, I'm so fucking tired. I'm like, what are you talking about, dude? We're just getting ready to get it, you know, make a run on this motherfucker. Like, like, this ain't no time, you know, time to be tired. Let's go. And I think that was the biggest thing with young guys, is just seeing like how fast they broke down. And
is that an inability to pace, or is it just it's a new gear they hit, and you just gotta fucking stress to progress?
Well, that might, I think in college there's like this idea where you're like a student athlete, right? So you have a life, you go to school, you play, and there's requirements. All of a sudden you get to the NFL, and they're like, this is all you do. You show up there and, you know, we would show up at, you know, 6:30 in the morning. We would train. Our first meeting was at, you know, we'd watch film at 8, you know, and then it's like, you know, first meeting's at 9, and then all of a sudden you're there to lunch, and, you know, like, you leave at 4 or 5 o'clock at night, and you do that every day. Like, there is no social life. There is no school. There is no, like, NCAA requirement on it. I think it's just, for a lot of young guys, it's just really overwhelming, you know. Now, having retired, I miss it, because it was nice to show up and never have to think about what you were going to do that day. Mm-hmm. You know, now, you know, I remember I retired and I was like, now what the fuck am I going to do?
Your whole life had been a schedule.
Yeah, since you think about it, you start playing at 14 years old. For over 20, almost 20 years of my life, every single day was regimented with a schedule. Mm-hmm. You know, and it was kind of like, I mean, you obviously know the feeling after the season ends when all of a sudden you have your exit meeting. You know, you come in and the coach goes, okay, I'll see you guys in a couple months, and everybody looks over and they're like, now what do we do?
Yeah.
Matter, it's fucking plane tickets, limo, you know, people go crazy, and it's like all of a sudden you're like, fuck, I guess I don't, you know, get in trouble, you know. So the joys of it. But no, it was a lot of fun. I'm sure, dude, like you relate, like it was one of the most rich, fun experiences I've ever had for not only just the competition aspect, but, you know, the ability to go out and do that job at a high level and, you know, be able to do it with your friends. I mean, hopefully some guys you like and a lot of guys you don't, but nevertheless, you guys always have a common mission, which is to go out and beat people's asses, which is really interesting when you get out, when you stop playing, you're like, fuck, I don't get to go out and just, you know, fucking strap up a helmet and get out all of my anger every single day on some poor fucker on the field. It's, that was the biggest adjustment for me, was that I didn't have the ability to go, like, let out my aggression on things. You know, and that's, that's sad. I think the world would be a better place if everybody got to strap up a fucking helmet and go beat
each other. Go fucking beat wholesale ass.
So what's any injuries, anything you're dealing with right now, like training wise, like any goals, like, you know, give us kind of a rundown of where you're at, how you're feeling.
Yeah. I mean, you know how it is, there's always something going on. But I had some problems with my toe, with the turf toe thing. I had like a bone spur in there. I ended up getting that kind of fixed up a little bit. And then, but like most stuff just kind of, I needed the rest. Like the off season's such a crucial time because like just taking time off and just like getting your body rested. So I ramped things back up about a month or month and a half ago. And it's been fun getting back into it. But obviously like talk about like a regimen and doing all that. Like in the off season, like you get done training and getting done with your massages and taking care of your body. And then it's kind of like, all right, what do I do now? I just sit around and do nothing all day. So it's like now I'm kind of like antsy. Yeah, I'm like antsy to get back to New Orleans and get things ramped up again. And then I know like whenever camp hits, I'm gonna be halfway through camp and be like, shit, I wish I get back to off season where I was doing nothing because this shit sucks.
Where do you live down in like New Orleans, like Metairie, that area?
I live in the Warehouse District, so it's like downtown. Sure, yeah, sure. Yeah.
Nice. Yeah, I know New Orleans. I trained for the combine when I was out in Kenner, like Metairie area.
Oh, okay.
Yeah, Tom Shaw, who's out in Orlando now. So I went down and worked out with Tom Shaw down there. So I used to kick New Orleans a little bit.
Yeah, it's a fun city. I mean, it took me a little while to get used to it. New Orleans definitely different, and you got to kind of be from there to kind of fit in there. So, but being like a Saints guy. They obviously, you know, open up to you a lot more. So once I've been in there, I got plugged in, like it's been a lot more fun and I've enjoyed being in the city.
Yeah, no, I had a good time when I was down there. And then I lived in Tampa in the off seasons. And so I lived down there for a long time. So we used to, jump on the plane and come over to New Orleans a lot in the off season. And my buddy, Kyle Turley at the time was playing for the Saints. So I used to come over and kick with Kyle a bit. And he was like a fucking rock star in New Orleans.
Oh, yeah. You know? Yeah, I mean, I'm not like married or anything, so I'm not like tied down to any place, which is kind of nice.
Good for you.
You're living John's dream.
Yeah,
NFL athlete.
I'm enjoying it.
CrossFit gym with a bunch of CrossFit girls just wandering around shaking their ass.
It's great.
My only regret, and not my only regret, but I'm sad that I wasn't a little bit younger because if I had been single playing the NFL, I would have joined every single CrossFit gym within like 100 miles. I would have fucking traveled just to drop in on CrossFit gyms.
Yeah.
Like, I would have been on Instagram and been like, where does she train? Can we take a trip?
Right.
Oh my God. I play in the NFL. Oh, it's so nice. You want to go get a shake or something? Like,
dude, look at the grin on his face. He knows what's up.
Yeah. Well, so when I came in the NFL, I was a young guy. I had a girlfriend from college, and I remember there was like, you know, all the old dudes, like I think it was four rookies, and like there was, I think, like, you know, 10 old guys. Like seven of them were divorced, two were separated, and one was in the process of getting a divorce. And I remember they gave me some great advice. They were like, man, for some reason, being married in the NFL doesn't really work that well. And they were like, if you want to, you know, guaranteed on staying married, having a happy deal, don't think about it until you retire. And I was like, really? Oh, that sounds all right. And then that's what I ended up doing. I ended up with single my NFL career, and then I got married after. Just because, you know, playing in the NFL, dude, it's fairly selfish.
Yeah.
You know, and being a parent and being married is actually the opposite of being selfish. Like, being a parent is like the most anti-selfish thing you do because the kids are so selfish. I mean, it's all about them. Mm-hmm. And, you know, being married, splitting time, like, I can't imagine having, you know, the time and effort that I put into not only playing, training, eating, and just enjoying my life. Like, I would never have traded that, you know, and like the, you know, and then the other, you know, now that I'm, you know, out of it and I'm married and I got kids and stuff, like, I'm really glad I did it that way. Like, there was really no regrets. So I'm stoked that, you know, you're a young guy out there, you know, just living your life, having a good time and like, you know, doing that. Cause I mean, I remember dudes I played with that had like 3 and 4 kids and were trying to be dads and husbands and this and doing all these things. And I'm like, man, fuck, that just seems really overwhelming. Like, I just
know, like coming back from practice or something like that, or a tough game and having to answer a bunch of questions when you got home. Like, I can't even imagine that right now.
Dude, like
I love going back to my apartment with no one there and just sitting there and being by myself for the night.
I can, let me tell you, I could not agree more. I dream of coming home and nobody being home. Just it's impossible. I got 3 kids now and a wife. So I mean, I'm never by myself. My only joy is when I get here to the office early and Luke doesn't show up and I'm here by myself.
I can do that every day if you want.
You should just work from home. But you know what, like it's, you know, and I don't think people realize this, but to really, you know, be really good at your job and to really do, you know, the job that you're doing and do it at a high level, you have to be a selfish person. You're like, yeah. It has to be about you. You're like, man, I want to train. I want to sleep. I want to eat. I want to enjoy my life. And I want to like, you know, relax. And, you know, the problem is that you can't burn the candle at both ends and be successful. I mean, some guys can. I couldn't. Like, I couldn't have all of this going on over here and be successful over here. And I think for a lot of guys, they just heap so much on your plate. And I'm like, dude, like, just take a deep breath, man. Like, do, you know, be good at what you're at and, you know, and fucking enjoy it. Because I don't think a lot of guys really take the opportunity to really enjoy what they're doing. And it, you know, it happens so fast. I mean, dude, I played 10 years and like, it seemed like the blink of an eye. Like, I remember all of a sudden I retired and I was like, shit, that went by really fast. And it's just cause you're in the, you know, you're in the fight and you're kind of living it and doing it. And then all of a sudden you get out, you take a step back and you're like, man, that was pretty fucking awesome. And somebody paid me a lot of money to go beat people's asses and lift weights and train and, you know, and, now what do we do? So.
That's yeah, just I got
Yeah.
I know my ex girlfriend won't be listening to this, so I can say this, but when I first got to New Orleans, I had a girlfriend and she was like, and I went down there and I told her like, hey, I just want to let you know, like, you know, this has been my dream. I'm probably going to be very selfish. Like I want to focus on this. We won't be able to talk as much. She was like, oh, okay, I'm fine with that. 2 months later, she calls me and is like, hey, I think I need to move there. Like, you know, I want to move forward in our relationship. This is my rookie year. And I was like, that's not what I want. I don't want that. I don't want you moving here. I don't even know if I'm going to make the team. She's like, well, that's what I want. It's over. And I was like, all right, bye.
See ya. Yeah. Oh, you're like, that was so easy.
And so, like, think about it now. Like, I could have went through my career, like, with a girlfriend, got engaged probably my rookie year. I could be having, like, my first kid right now. But, you know, that decision now is looking like, sweeter and sweeter every day. So,
well, I'll just give you this, dude. The dad that I am today is a much better father than I would have been if I had kids early on. Just you know, I mean, just the amount of time and effort and like you got to be able to appreciate it a little bit. You got to have some fucking perspective. Like, you know, having been through a different trials and tribulations, lived in different places, experienced different things, it just gives you a much more rich experience. Whereas, you know, like. I had some people that, you know, were in preschool with. So the parents, like the dad just had his 40th birthday and he's like, oh, you know, he's having all these problems with it. And he was kind of asked my wife, you know, when we were out, he's like, you know, I'm having these issues. And she's like, you know, how does John feel about it? And she's like, I don't think he gives a shit. He's like, really? Why? He's like, cause I think in his, you know, for a bunch of years of his life, he lived a life he exactly wanted to. And, you know, now at this point, you're living the life that you want. I think a lot of people, you know, have a lot of regrets. So all of a sudden when they get a little bit older and they hit a couple like milestones, like a 30 or 40 years old, people get this feeling of regret. Like I haven't accomplished or did the things that I wanted to. And whereas, you know, somebody asked me, you know, like, if you die tomorrow, would you feel fulfilled? I'd be like, honestly, when I get up there, the dude's going to look at me and be like, you had a lot of fun, you know, go that way. And so, you know, and I think that's what you should do. You know, you should go out. I mean, dude, you have a job that less than, you know, 0.001% of the population ever gets to do. You get to, you know, that feeling of putting on the game day uni and fucking running out of the tunnel and hearing your name called in front of 100,000 people cheering is like, you know, a phenomenal deal to be able to go out and play that game and fight one-on-one and battle and do all those things. I mean, is killer. And dude, I wish everybody got to experience that, but very few people do. And so with that, I think you just the perspective of having that opportunity. I mean, you know, fucking enjoy it. And, you know, and like, you know, look at it like, hey, I'm going to, you know, and like you said it perfect, like be selfish, dude. Like there's nothing wrong with that. Like people equate selfish with being bad, but I look at it like, fuck, that's the only way that you're ever going to be the best at what you want to be is to be a little selfish on that end. You got fucking the rest of your life to be unselfish. So fucking good for you. It fucking makes me smile, brings, you know, fucking warms my heart. It was like, I remember when I was an older guy, these young guys would come in and all this, and I'd be like, yo, you're doing it all fucking wrong. Like, take a deep breath, you know, enjoy this shit because you might be home tomorrow, you know, and they'd be like, oh,
right.
No, fucking buy a house and get married.
Get those Rams.
Like, but yeah, I always tell these guys, my favorite story was this fucking dipshit bought, like, I think it was like 20 pairs of rims and had them delivered to the stadium, and they were in front of his locker. Because, you know, his rims kept cracking out on the big dips. And so he just ordered a whole bunch of rims because he got some deal on a volume order. And but yet had nowhere to store them and no way to get them home. So he had to pay the fucking equipment dude to store them in the back of the equipment room. And the dude had like 20 sets of rims. It was like, it was fucking crazy. I was like, he had his boxes up, and they asked me, what's the stupidest thing I saw? I was like, the dude that bought 20 sets of rims. I mean, it had to be $75,000 worth of fucking rims.
The guys spending money is just another whole discussion on that stuff.
Dude, I think they think I'm fucking with them, but I'm like, I've seen people do the dumbest shit where you're like, and I'm sure you don't do this. I'm gauging by your attire right now, but some of the guys we used to play used to have little fashion contests about who they would like. A lot of the DBs and a lot of the guys and linebackers, they would have these like little dress up thing on road games, and they would like show up for like their little fashion show, and then everybody would vote on who the winner was, and they put like a pot of money together on it. The fucking outfits dudes would show up in would blow your fucking mind. It was
That's retarded. And then like guys, like I know guys this year that were like, hey, awesome. Like some of the younger guys, hey, we get like a player performance bonus, right, in the off season. I'm like, yeah, man, but that shouldn't be like, don't think of that as like another check. Like, you know, that should go to like savings and stuff. He's like, well, you know, I've saved up a little bit, man. I got like, you know, 50 grand left. I'm like, what? Dude, you made 600 grand this year and you got 50 grand left? Are you kidding me?
Dude, the way that shit happens is, you know, a set of gators cost you $5,000 and you got them in 20 different colors. Like, I swear to dude, a guy showed up in custom size 14 yellow gators. You got to have gators at all times. That was a big deal. I mean, mink coats, mink hats. I mean, like, dude, Louis Vuitton, like the craziest shit. And then I actually went the other way, and I was trying to figure out outfits that were just above the bar by this much to where I wouldn't get fined. I had, like, a baby blue corduroy jacket that had the patches on the elbows.
Oh, and nice.
Like, they were like, you have to wear a collared shirt. So I had, like, a polo shirt with a tie on. And then, like, it was a tie, but with fancy. A polo shirt. Because they were like, you have to have a shirt with a collar and a tie. And then they, like, we had to wear a sports coat. So I had this baby with the patches. It was so over the top. And I just remember we had to have leather shoes. And so I was wearing suade Vans.
Yeah.
And, like, I remember, yes. I remember Andy Reid coming by and just being like, just shaking his head at me, and I'm like, I'm wearing a collar and a fucking shirt. It just, to me, it seemed fucking stupid to like waste all this money on stupid shit, you know? Like, I don't know. I mean, like a fucking size XXX mink coat, like really $40,000 on a fucking coat? it's worthless to me. But hey, it's Deister on, I guess. Now, if that was a weekend in Vegas with a bunch of steak dinners, I got no problem spending that.
Yeah, that's different.
Not spending that on fucking gators and a mink coat.
Unless we're eating the gators.
I was telling these guys one year we went out in Vegas, and I was I like to gamble, but I don't like to lose. So it's like this weird thing where I enjoy gambling, but I don't like to lose, so I just don't gamble. Because I hate to lose more than I like to gamble. And so we were there playing these tables, and I think I've won like $500 or $600. And so I'm sitting next to this dude who was a, you know, first rounder, you know, played in the NFL a long time, you know, big money dude. And he's like, "How you doing?" I'm like, "I'm up like, you know, 600. He's like, "Oh, I'm down like 750. I'm like, "Oh." And then I look over and I'm playing like $100 chips, and he's playing like $10,000 stacks. And I realized he was down $750,000.
Dude,
thank God I was up $600. I mean, I was just hoping to get some fucking in and out on my drive home. Yeah, right. You know? And yeah, but just I'm sure we could talk for fucking hours about just the decadence and the fucking way people blow money. I mean, it's unbelievable. So it's good stuff, though. You get a good laugh out of it. It's good stories later on in life.
Yeah, dude.
Yeah.
You know, you're never shocked by anything.
So what's this season look like for you, Austin? I mean, what are you going in? Got your mind right? Ready for your contest?
My what contest?
Your Metcon?
The condition test?
Yeah, the condo test, the condo.
Right. No, I'm excited. We should, you know, they've made a lot of changes this offseason, so we'll see what happens. I mean, you just never know. Honestly, like this league's so much about like the smallest margin that your season could change, you know, so drastically, so quickly. But me personally, you know, I just, you know, the reason this, like, it's gone so fast for me, like, I'll never forget, like, rookie year, I was like, you know, I'd love to just play for 1 year. Let me make it 1 year. And then 1 year turned into 2 years. And then now I'm going into my fourth season. It's kind of like, it just goes by so fast because you're always fighting and trying to just make it. And once you make it, it's like, all right, think about it. It's all about week to week. It's not about, you know, people don't kind of forget that, like, even though, you know, you make the opening day roster or, like, you know, they make the final cuts, guys get cut all week, every week. And, like, so it's stressful and, like, you know, you take it week to week, and then next thing you know, the season's over and you're in the off season again.
Well, that's especially for you, too. You're kind of at that pivotal kind of vested deal where, you know, 3 years, three games. So you're going into your fourth year. This is like a big year for you in terms of getting vested.
Right. So I need three games. And so,
yeah. So, you know, that is.
So, then, Austin, do you think that stress helps your performance?
The what?
You think that high level of stress helps you be the best Austin Johnson you can be every day?
I do because, like, I like, you know, one, I like having a chip on my shoulder. I like, you know, kind of – I had heard, like, the scouts had said, like, when I first got there that I couldn't – they didn't think I could play in the NFL. And so, like, I always kind of looked at that like, all right, that's fine. Like, you know, I mean, I wasn't always – you know, I've obviously been blessed with a lot of good abilities and attributes and traits. And but the stress, like – it doesn't really get to me because I've had it my whole life, and, like, that's just part of the game. Like, it's going to be stressful, but as long as you're prepared and ready to go, and, like, I know I'm going to be that when it comes Sunday, the game's easy. So, but, like, being a fullback is, like, you don't really know, like, how much you're going to play or, you know, kind of going in every season is, all right, are they still going to be using a fullback a lot, or is it going to start moving away from using a fullback? I get that question every camp, like, oh, well, you're seeing these many teams not use fullback anymore. Like, do you think that's going to happen with y'all? And I'm like, you know, I don't know. I can't control that, but I do really well on special teams, so I know I can contribute there. And then when they need me at fullback, I contribute there. So I think ultimately just making myself as versatile as possible kind of and being good at everything that I do, you know, hopefully keeps me around as long as I can.
So you went on drafted, which is a challenge, and then you transitioned from linebacker to fullback. Was that your call, scout's call, coach's call?
Yeah, well, definitely wasn't my call. I mean, I wanted to play linebacker. When Kiffin came, he played me at fullback. So I played fullback for one season with Tennessee. So when I did my pro day, I did both because I wanted teams to know, like, hey, you know, I mean, I was just trying to make it in the NFL. So I was like, you know, I'll do some running back stuff too. Maybe a team will see me at that. And every team I talked to, they're like, you know, we see a linebacker. And then the Saints called and they saw me at a fullback. And at that point, I'd waited a year. So I was like, screw it. I'm going. I'm not, you know, going to wait to see if someone else calls to play linebacker. But the transition, I mean, it's all a mentality, what I've learned. I mean, at the end of the day, I'm not the best player out there, and I know that. But I know that I want it more than the guy across from me. I know that he's not going to come in as hard as I'm going to come in, and I'm basically going to beat him. And, like, if you go – when I don't have that mentality anymore, then I know that it's probably time for me to, you know, hang it up and not play anymore. But to right now, if I'm lining up, I can easily turn a switch on, you know, in 2 seconds. And when I'm running an ISO, you know, I'm not going to be, you know, scared to run in there and hit the biggest linebacker in there, even though I might not be the biggest fullback. So,
well, I mean, you know, I always hear that thing where people are like, oh, you know, teams get rid of their fullbacks. And I think that's bullshit. If you have a good fullback, nobody gets rid of a good fullback. I think that, right, that all of a sudden don't have a player, all of a sudden go from that. But I mean, shit, dude, I can think of every team that I played on, you know, that we had a strong running game. I mean, dude, the year that, you know, all those years with the Chiefs, with Priest Holmes and Larry Johnson. I mean, dude, we had Tony Richardson in there, and T. Rich was, like, you know, one of the best. You know, John Ritchie, when I played in Philly, I mean, you know, and Kevin Turner, who just passed away, you know, he was our fullback my rookie year. And so, I mean, I think, you know, the teams that, you know, have always kind of run that power game and, you know, that, you know, like you said, like inside zone, outside zone, I mean, all that stuff really comes out with a lead blocker. I mean, there aren't too many people that are running a, you know, ace back that's running a solo type deal. I mean, you really can't run. I mean, you think about it, like how do you run inside, outside power and, you know, all those different deals, like, without a lead back? It's fucking tough.
Yeah. And, like, colleges nowadays are going to, like, spreads and everything, so it's hard to find them. So, like, a lot of the fullbacks in the league now are guys that are converted, you know, to either a running back converted or a defensive player converted. So that's what you're seeing more anyways. Did you play with or against Greg Jones?
Greg Jones.
He played running back for Florida State. He's, like, you know, yoked up, and then he went to Jacksonville. He played fullback there for, like, 7 or 8 years, and he retired about 2 years ago.
I can't picture his name. I mean, I remember what was his who was
he would have been younger when you were playing, maybe like a rookie. I don't know what his first year was.
I can't remember.
2004 was his first year.
Oh yeah, okay, yeah. The one dude I always remember is when we went down to play Jacksonville. Their running back was that little stout dude.
Maurice Jones-Drew?
Yeah. Dude, he killed us.
Like, that was like, dude, the duo. It was Greg Jones, Maurice Jones-Drew. They were like a duo.
We went down there, I want to say, in like 2006 or 2007, and that little dude absolutely killed us. Like, he fucking Derek Johnson was our linebacker, and, you know, DJ was a Texas guy and, you know, played a long time. And real bad body. If he's listening to us, I'm going to fucking tear him up. He always had a bad body. But, you know, such a gifted athlete. And I remember that little dude, I mean, and DJ's fast. That little guy fucking smoked him and was, you know, I mean, he wasn't very big. He'd be, what, like every bit of like maybe 5'7", 5'8". And, dude, the dude was killing people. So he's a good player.
Yeah, I'd seen highlights from him, like, on some blitz pickups. Maurice Jones-Drew, and he definitely comes out of his hips, on, you know.
Oh, yes.
He's smacking some bulls.
Dude, when so I remember I played with LeVon Kirkland. LeVon Kirkland was like 6 foot, 300 pound, middle linebacker for the Steelers. And I remember the first time I got to go play against him when he was at Pittsburgh. I came out, I figured this big dude was going to light me up, and I went out there and fucking lunged at him, and he fucking Olay'd me. And I remember I was like, I thought you were going to hit me. He's like, I ain't trying to hit nobody. And the next play, I came out, and I came out a little hesitant. And he fucking buried me. And he was, you know, and it was one of those things where I was like, okay, I gotcha. And then he came over to the Eagles, and he laughed, and he's like, man, I get everybody with that. He's like, don't feel bad. And I was like, so I remember when he retired, he gave me one of his jerseys from Pittsburgh, and I still got it on my wall. So I remember all the old guys that were real just contributed to my education as a player. They, you know, I would, like, at the end of the year, you know, when they give you a bunch of jerseys. So I always traded jerseys with all the old guys, and I always kept all their stuff just because I was like, when people ask me about him, I'm always like, let me tell you what that guy taught me. And yeah, he was
that's cool a great guy. One.
Yeah. So like when Jared Allen was a rookie when I was, or, you know, was in Kansas City. And so I took him under my wing. And so I remember I gave him my jersey. He was like, what's it? And I told him, and he's like, oh shit, I'm going to do that every year after. So, and he went on, just retired, ended up being a pretty damn good player.
Yeah, he had a cool retirement video.
Yeah, riding off.
Yeah.
On the horseback.
Yeah, I was supposed to go to his retirement party, but my wife ended up deciding to have a baby.
Yeah.
So we ended up having to miss it. But no, he was a good player, man. And really what helped him was when he came in as a rookie, he got to face Willie Rofe every day. And Willie Rofe, played in New Orleans for a long time, but Willie probably one of the best offensive linemen I've ever seen in my life.
And Willie, he's a legend in New Orleans.
Yeah, he is. Yeah, well, I mean, he played at La Tech, and but yeah, Willie fucking beast, and Willie was out there fucking killing him every day. And I remember one day Jared ended up beating him, and we were like, this kid might actually be pretty fucking good. And Jared Allen ended up being a pretty good player.
So. I mean, the opportunity, man. Had he not had that opportunity, where would Jared Allen be today?
Well, you think about, every day, that offensive line I played on is considered one of the best in pro football ever. I mean, with Will Shields and Willie Rofe and, Tony Gonzalez. And then we had this dude named Jason, fucking forgetting his last name, Jason Dunn, who was really an offensive lineman moonlighting as a tight end. He was probably about 6'4", probably about 285 pounds. And, dude, between him and Tony, that was really how we had all those running yards with Priest Holmes and Tony Richardson. We just – fucking off tackle, just killing people every play. So we had a pretty good deal in that way. So I felt fortunate just to be included on that one. So, that's the cool part is you get to come in and you get to see all these kind of like, at least that was for me. I remember I got to come in and start as a rookie. You get to you're playing with all these dudes and you're like, fuck, I actually know who these guys are. These guys are all really good. Are you sure I should be out here? And then all of a sudden you realize you get a little bit older and you're like, oh fuck, I do belong out here, So it's a cool
thing.
And I'm sure you feel like that lining up with Drew Brees. You're like, isn't this dude on the cover of Madden at some point?
Yeah, it definitely was shocking at first, but, now it's kind of like just another day at work,
Yeah.
Where you roll in and you're like, I thought you would have been taller. That was one thing I always remember. Right. Like, this is a little motherfucker right here. And to be slinging the ball and running like he does. I remember when I met Drew Brees, I was like, he's a fucking little dude. But, that guy will fucking slang it. That's what you got to like.
Yeah. He's awesome too. He's a good. I'm very lucky to have him as our quarterback. So,
yeah. Well, he's kind of like a Peyton Manning type guy where he knows what's going on before everybody else does. He's been around long enough to where he's not just a student of the game, but he's a professor of the game. And
he makes blitz pick up 10 times easier.
he gets up there and he's like pointing stuff out.
Sometimes the line gets pissed at him though because he'll know there's only four coming, but he knows the safety's coming, so he mics the safety. So now the line's got to pick him up, and the running back gets out.
Yeah, changing the protection, slide it that way. Yeah.
So, yeah.
I always see when you guys watch it, when they run to the line, you see the center always point out. And he's usually always pointing out Mike. So basically, all the protections and the runs are all based off of the Mike call. And then all of a sudden, you see the quarterback slap and change the mic call, and you see a bunch of offensive linemen fucking look over the shoulder all pissed off because they're like fucking overriding the mic call. So and then you're like, fucking everybody up. So,
yeah.
Nice. So, any big plans this offseason? You got anything? Going on any trips? Doing anything fun? Come on, let us live vicariously through you.
Dude, I haven't really. I've been hunting a little bit, so I've been turkey hunting. My dad has some land in South Carolina, so I go up there and I turkey hunt. I've been doing that all this week. And
did you bag a turkey or no?
I haven't yet. Dude, they're pissing me off.
Dude, they are fast, big-blooded birds.
And fucking, see every fucking thing, dude.
They see everything, and they're gobbling, and then, when they come off the roost, they're shutting up, and I don't even know where they are, so I try to sneak up on them, and next thing you know, they're running off.
So you're stalking them?
Are you bow hunting them?
Well, I'm having to because they're not gobbling right now. I guess they're all hinned up, so it's kind of screwing up my hunts. But no, I wasn't. I have killed two turkeys with my bow before, but I'm going with my shotgun because when I go with my bow, I have to sit in a blind the whole time. Mm-hmm. So I kind of running around and chasing them a little, running gunning a little bit more with the shotgun. Sure. So
we used to go turkey hunting in Kansas City, and I remember we would sit up in those blinds with the bows, and actually that was pretty fun. try to shoot them. But I was always amazed at how fucking fast those big butted birds move. You know, you think things with big butts can't move that fast. Those motherfuckers, I mean, they can't fly, but they can fucking jump.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, they're tough to kill. But no other really trips planned yet. I mean, I'm going to got some concerts we're going to, some of my buddies, and then New Orleans, there's always stuff going on.
Yeah.
So we got like Jazz Fest coming up, and then we got, you know, Bayou Country Music Fest coming up. Chris Stapleton's coming in town.
Nice.
So we always get hooked up on all those and go to those and kind of enjoy ourselves a little bit. Nothing's better than OTAs. I mean, it's just kind of being back with the guys and like training every day and just kind of enjoying that together. And it's like not really the stress of football yet. You know, I think it's kind of the best time of the year.
Well, it's a great time in New Orleans. It's not hot yet and it's still sunny.
Yeah, it's great weather.
No, dude, I like to see Chris Stapleton. The other guy I've been dying to see is Eric Church.
Yeah.
So, I mean, we, you know, it's stuff we listen to here at the office. I mean, but yeah, it's good stuff.
Yep.
Nice.
Tex, you got anything else?
Yeah, man. Austin, when are we going to get you to a CrossFit football seminar? We got Tennessee in June.
Tennessee?
Yeah.
In June? June what?
6th.
Yeah. First weekend.
Okay.
Dude, get out there. We're there.
Unless you got OTAs.
Yeah, I'm trying to think when we get off OTAs.
At least just show up and wave and just get in there for the pick.
Where'd you say in Tennessee?
I think it's at Cooksville.
Oh, nice.
Yeah, at Rich Froning, you could have a showdown with Rich Froning. It's at his gym.
Yeah, I don't think that's gonna happen. Aww. Dude, do y'all do like the open workouts and stuff?
No, I've changed my major. I'm out.
Yeah, like those workouts are ridiculous.
No,
I didn't do them. Like, I keep my training real. You know, like I love doing like 90-second workouts. Like I'll go all out, do like a 20 calorie air dyne.
Who are you trying to impress in 90 seconds? Come on.
Yeah, right.
Hey,
I tell Luke all the time. Who are you trying to impress in 10 seconds?
That's right.
Hey, like these like engine ones like that are lasting 20 minutes just aren't for me. I'm telling you.
Dude, that's I don't know who that's fucking favorite.
That's a Prius engine.
Yeah, that's right. That's no dragster.
Yeah, dude, it's a 20 calorie air dyne sprint, maybe 4 burpees, and 10 kettlebell swings.
Burpees. Fuck.
No, you got 90 seconds, 20 calories on the air dyne and AMRAP dumbbell thrusters. Rest 90 seconds and repeat that until you fall off your numbers.
I like air dyne sprint and hammer curls.
hammer curls.
That's like our favorite one.
Yeah, right I was warming up on the assault bike yesterday, and I decided to just do like a little 15 second sprint, but I was going backwards. Dude, you want to fucking blast your quads? I'm telling you, occlusion, air dyne, reverse pedal. That thing is fucking, I'm telling you, it's going to crush people. Okay. So. All
right, I'm in.
The only way I can get guys on my team to work out with me is if I throw in some hammer curls. So I'll make sure I bring that workout back.
Dude, to steady diet of hammer curls can get you right. You know, I mean, there was always the fear of, like, you know, having, like, the skinny arms hanging out of your jersey, you know? So, dude,
yeah, you're right.
Do that shit up and do some arm, like, man, my arms don't look so good.
Every Saturday after walkthrough, we all go in the weight room and have the TV arm day. Oh. Everybody just tries to get swole before Sunday.
That was our deal on Fridays, man. We were going there. It was fucking, that's where the whole Jack Street thing comes in. We were like, man, there's this place over in Philly. It's called Jack Street. You got to get on it. So that was
nice.
So Friday, and that's why that whole program is called Jack Street, is based up on this, like, you know, what we would do on our Fridays for just bodybuilding shit.
And, it's,
you know, like Broad Street was where the facility was. You got Broad Street. No, it's Jack Street, dude. Get over here. Let's go.
So occlusion stuff, you get all the benefits without fucking overworking. So that's definitely a conversation to have.
Yeah, dude. If we got all this write up on occlusion, the idea is that it's like blood flow restricted training. You actually use bands to actually reduce venial blood flow. So what it does is it forces blood to pool in the muscle. And it's got some pretty cool stuff. It ramps up growth hormone like 300 times and also actually has some myostatin blockers. So, you know, like the myostatin bulls, it's got some pretty cool stuff that we've been doing with it. And you can actually use a lighter load so you don't stress the joint out as much. And just the idea is about just fucking flushing the blood. And it actually, is kind of neat too, because it trains both
fast twitch, slow twitch.
Well, no, it trains type AB and type X fibers, and also slow twitch. So it's kind of a cool deal. We started using it in all of our finisher stuff, but it fucking works.
And you get a fucking sick pump, dude.
Yeah, you get a mean pump.
I like it. Nothing better than a sick pump.
Yeah, it works good. So, yeah, you have to throw
like
it.
Arnold would say, you know, Arnold is better than coming.
Yeah, right.
Dude, I'm actually working on an article right now. It's called Chasing the Pump. And in it, Arnold's like, I have the best life. I'm coming all day. oddly enough, I was looking for some of his quotes. And one of my favorite gifts ever, I got at our annual Christmas party. Somebody gave me the Arnold Schwarzenegger Modern Encyclopedia of Bodybuilding. It even goes into how to pick your pose, your trunks for your bodybuilding show. I was like, somebody gave it to me, and I was like, let me pull this shit out. I'm looking, I'm like, he's like giving there talking about how to tailor your fucking underwear so you look like that.
Oh, wow.
Go over that a little bit.
So read it cover to cover, and what type of trunks would you go for?
You know, Arnold like brown trunks. I'd probably go with black. I think I go to black ones.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, makes the package look bigger.
Oh, yeah. Stripes.
Red all day.
Yeah.
Your red, Tex?
Oh, yeah.
Flash. Dude, I'm going yellow trunks to really, like, highlight the bronze. You know what I mean?
Really? Red trunks?
Well, it's like Ace and Gary, ambiguously gay duo.
dude, did you ever hear of a receiver named Johnny Morton?
Yeah.
They played at USC. So Johnny Morton
He's our wide receivers coach.
Shut the fuck up, really?
Yeah.
Let me tell you a Johnny Morton story. And you can add,
he played in the NFL, right, for a little while?
Johnny Morton played in the NFL for a long time.
Okay, yeah. He's our wide receivers coach, I'm pretty sure.
Is he like a kind of light-skinned black dude?
Nope, he's not our wide receivers coach. All right, go ahead.
Okay. Well, there's this dude on our team named Johnny Morton. He played at USC. And all of a sudden, you know, you come in the morning and, you know, people are getting undressed and whatever, getting your stuff, and he had a locker near me. All of a sudden, he goes, takes off his pants, and the motherfucker was wearing a thong.
What's wrong with that?
Right? Just straight up man thong. Like, I'm talking like not like a woman's thong. Like a man thong.
Yeah, I got the banana hammer.
Right, and I remember where everybody was like, and he was like, like he like looked down and he was like, he goes to like, oh man, I was just fucking with you guys to see what would happen, and we were like, this dude sort of had like Botox and shit. He used to go get like microdermal facials and all this stuff, and I'm like, he was like the dude that went and got a pedicure and a manicure every Friday after fucking practice. He had to look good on game day, and motherfucker was wearing a thong. So,
oh, that's great.
So, well, thanks, dude. I really appreciate it, man.
Man.
Let us suck up as much time as you can. So, I'm sure you're trying to figure out your next meal. But, dude, thanks for jumping on, and fuck, dude. Stay in touch. Hopefully, we'll see you soon.
Yeah,
I appreciate it.
I'll hit you up with the info on that cert if you can hop over if you're available.
Yeah, I would love to join one. That sounds fun.
Yeah, I'd dude. Open invitation. So just whenever we're out your way, we'll shoot you a message, but keep an eye on the schedule, or, you know, however, we'll cross paths for sure.
Yeah. And where are y'all located?
In Newport Beach.
Y'all. Oh, okay.
If you ever make it out to Orange County, California, Newport Beach, Southern California, dude, you're always welcome.
Yeah. I go out to San Diego every off season, and I train with Mike Carney. He played fullback for a while in the NFL.
Yeah. The John Carney, who the kicker, he's having a deal for his, I think it's dinner with the pros next week. So
okay.
Charity deal. I'm one of the waiters for that. So him and Steve.
Oh, nice.
That, so.
Yeah. Me and Mike, we went over to John Carney's and trained at his thing and did all that. But yeah, man, if I'm nearby or something like that, I'll holler at y'all. I'd love to like work out with y'all and kind of just hang out for a day or something.
Yeah, dude. Even if you're in San Diego, it's easier to get to.
Yeah, it's less than, I think it's like 45 minutes.
So.
Oh, that's not bad at all.
Yeah, stay in touch.
Yeah, it's quick.
All right, cool. I appreciate y'all having me.
All you right, know man. It, Austin, man. Have a good one, man.
Take care.
Best luck. Stay healthy.
Now it's time for you to empower your performance. You can stalk Austin Johnson in your free time by following him on Instagram at AustinJ40. Also, come football season, you'll be able to catch him playing for the Saints.
Don't forget to stay connected to Power Athlete posts, happenings, and bullshit memes by following us on Instagram at Power Athlete HQ. Until next time, bye!
Bet365 is paying out before the final whistle.
Check out Bet365's unrivaled early payout offer. When you bet on a team to win and they take a 17-point lead, you get paid no matter the final score. Forget the final whistle and start counting that cash. Hold up. You get early payout on parlays, too.
Download the app and see why it's never ordinary at Bet365. Gambling problem? Call 1-800-GAMBLER. 21 plus only. Must be physically located in Ohio. T&Cs apply.